going to read from the Bible. The passages are in the centre of in the pew. They're on the right hand, of the order of service. There I have you. We're in Sunday morning already. We have a leaflet that we produce, and it's called In the Pew on a Sunday. So I have translated you to Sunday morning already. The Bible readings are taken from 1 Peter chapter 1, Romans chapter 8, and chapter 6, and 1 John chapter 1. 1 Peter chapter 1. Therefore, preparing your minds for action, and being sober-minded, set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, do not be conformed to the passions of your former ignorance. But as He who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct. Since it is written, "You shall be holy, for I am holy." And if you call on Him as Father, who judges impartially according to each one's deeds, conduct yourselves with fear throughout the time of your exile, knowing that you were ransomed from the futile ways inherited from your forefathers, not with perishable things such as silver or gold, but with the precious blood of God or of Christ, like that of a lamb without blemish or spot. Romans chapter 8. So then, brothers, we are debtors, not to the flesh, to live according to the flesh. For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body, you will live. For all who are led by the Spirit of God are sons of God. For you did not receive the spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you received the spirit of adoption as sons, by whom we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit Himself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God, and if children, then heirs, heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ, provided we suffer with Him, in order that we might also be glorified with Him. Romans 6. Let not sin therefore reign in your mortal body, to make you obey its passions. Do not present your members to sin as instruments for unrighteousness, but present yourselves to God as those who have been brought from death to life, and your members to God as instruments for righteousness. For sin will have no dominion over you, since you are not under law, but under grace. 1 John chapter 2. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and pride in possessions, is not from the Father, but is from the world. The world is passing away, along with its desires. But whoever does the will of God abides forever. Well, we come tonight to the final question. The final question that we have before us is, why or when is murder not only legal but required? I think of all the titles that I chose to address this week, this one has probably raised the most interest. My wife asked me one night in bed, what does that relate to? Other people in the congregation have said, when is it legal to murder? So I have a real sense of expectation. Everybody's sitting on the edge of their seats tonight. I wonder when was the last time you heard a minister openly advocate murder? Capital punishment, maybe. But given the state of our nation today, it's unlikely even that that which is lawfully required of a state Taking the life of one who has taken the life of another, that is seldom even preached on in our society today. But murder, surely God says we should not take the life of another human being. Yes, he does. And I want to state quite categorically from the outset, so there's absolutely no one gets any wrong of any stick, end of the stick wrong, that we should obey God in all that he commands. All that he commands. It's for our good and for his glory. So what lies behind this question? When is it not only legal, but required to murder? Who or what is to be the subject of our predetermined, deliberate, willful acts of putting to death? What object should we have in the crosshairs that we want to put to death in our lives? The answer is that which has dominated this week of subjects, and that is sin. God says that we are to place sin firmly in our sights, and we are to do all we can to put it to death. In fact, the putting to death of sin in our lives is really the proof of whether God has changed our life or he hasn't. What we say about God, what we speak about God in our lips, is really not that important in a sense. Many, many people say they believe in God. It's not uncommon to hear people say, "I believe in God." Repeatedly, when I spoke with people in Airdrie Town Square on Saturday afternoon to invite them to these week of services, and I said to them, first thing that came out of their lips is to do with the church, "Oh, I believe in God." I didn't ask them whether they believed in God or not, but it was almost the first thing that they said to me, because they recognized, oh, he's religious, he's into church, he must want to know, do I believe in God? But God says, whether a person says they believe in him or not is really irrelevant, because even the devil and those who worship and play with the devil, they say they believe in God. The true measure, God says, of whether a person is truly a believer in Jesus Christ is the action that they take against sin in their lives. We read about it in all those passages. 1 Peter, a foundation having been laid previously in the chapter about salvation in Jesus Christ. Then it goes on and says, you must be holy. Well, to be holy, you must put to death sin. Verse 13 of Romans chapter 8. For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body, you will live. Life hereafter in heaven is based upon faith in Jesus Christ and putting to death the sin in one's life. Romans chapter 6. Let not sin therefore reign in your mortal body to make you obey its passions. We are to put to death the sin in our lives. Do not love the world or the things in the world. 1 John chapter 2. But there are two questions that I want to address this evening concerning putting to death sin. And the first is, why must we put it to death? Why must we murder it? And the second question is, how can we murder sin? Why must we murder sin? God tells us that if we are to be united with him in heaven, we must believe in Jesus Christ. We must be cleansed from our sin. and when we must proactively engage in the putting to death of sin in our lives. But why is that the case? Why does God make such a song and dance about sin? Why is it so bad that he says you actually have to murder it? You have to kill it. Why does he use such severe and strong language about this sin that we have in our lives? If you're going to go out and do something, then you better have a good reason for doing it. You've got to understand why you're doing it. You've got to know the reason why you're doing it. If you're going to be determined about going out and applying yourself to a particular task, then you've got to know why you're doing what you're doing. And so if God says to us, we must murder sin, then it's a good question for us to ask, well, why, God, must we murder sin? There are a number of reasons why we must murder sin. We murder it because it is evil. We must murder it because it is contrary to God. We've seen that during the week, haven't we? We've seen how that man in his sin hates God. Man in his sin hates the very character of God. Man in his sin hates the very law of God. Man in his sin hates the attributes of God. Man in his sin hates the names of God. There may be even one or two of you in here tonight, and you're here, you feel under duress, and the reality is that you even hear, when you hear the mention of the word God, you think, I don't want to hear this. I don't want to hear this. It's an evidence that you hate God. You may say you believe in God, but the reality is, if you're honest, be honest with yourself. Be honest with yourself. The reality is, if you examine the way you think about God, about his attributes, about what he does, about what he says, you don't love him. You hate him. Well, the reality is, every one of us in this building tonight, we're in your shoes. We were every one of us in the same shoes as you're in. Because by nature, we are born haters and despisers of God. We loathe his name, his character, his attributes, and his work. And we have done so, God says, from the moment of our conception. It's contrary to God. Sin is evil because it's contrary to man. There is no good to be had from sin at all. There is nothing that sin can offer you and I that is of any good. Regardless of how sin presents itself or dresses itself up, the truth is that sin never, 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 never has anything good for us. All it has for us is destruction. Because we bear the image of God, and sin loathes that image. And sin will do all that it can within its power to retain us in a position where we will continue to despise that name and that work and those attributes of God. Sin offers us the world and gives us death. There is no pleasure to be had in sin. You see it as much as I do. Men take the good things that God gives to man. Sexual activity. Alcohol. The good pleasures in life, which God says, within moderation, are acceptable. I personally do not take alcohol, but that's a personal choice. But you see, when those pleasures that God has given to man for his enjoyment of life in moderation
And when they are taken and they are abused, out with the clear, defined parameters of God, they do not bring pleasure, they bring destruction. You see it. You see it in people's lives. We live in a part of the world where the evidence of the fact that sin says it's pleasurable is seen to be a lie in every street corner that we live in. You see that when sin comes and says, come and enjoy all that I can offer you, how it adds years to men's lives, how it breaks women's hearts, how it tears down relationships within families, how it leads to filled prison cells, how it leads to social work cases that are stacked high. You would think that in the world in which we live, in the so-called evolved abilities of man, and the culture that we live in, that we would have eradicated all that which is destructive for man. And we would say within our society, these things destroy us. These things destroy men. These things destroy women. These things destroy children. These things destroy everything that is good about man. And we must address them. They are not pleasurable, they're destructive. There's no peace to be gained from sin. There's no honor to be gained from sin. Sin is a terrible thing. And it claws and it scratches and it tears at everything that is good in the human life. Do you know that sin is worse than suffering? We all suffer in our lives. It's part and parcel of our human existence. Sometimes that suffering can be very hard. It can take a lot out of us. Jesus, speaking in Matthew chapter 5, says, you have heard it said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say that anyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of the members than your whole body be thrown into hell. If your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than your whole body go to hell. What is Jesus saying? Jesus is saying that it is better for you to endure physical harm than to engage in sin. Because the consequence of physical harm bears no resemblance at all to the consequence of sin. And any suffering that comes in our lives in any way, shape or form, cannot do to us what sin will do to us. Sin is far, far, far more dangerous. It is far worse than any physical suffering, any psychological suffering, any emotional suffering that we can endure. There are moments of light relief even in the person's life who suffers the most. But there will be not even one single solitary moment of relief for the person who dies in their sin. For they will be ushered into an eternity that is unspeakable. We think we live a hard life at times. We think suffering is bad. Suffering is nothing. It is temporal. It will come, it will go. But the consequences that sin brings doesn't last for a day or a week or a month or a year or a decade. The suffering that sin brings with it is a suffering that is perpetual, it is a suffering that is continual, and it is a suffering that is everlasting. Sin is worse than death. Sin
is worse than death for three reasons. The separation it brings, the terror it engenders, the corruption it produces. Sin brings separation. It brings separation in life, and it brings separation in death. In life, sin separates us from God, who is good, and all that He would give to us from His good and gracious hand. Sin says to man, have nothing to do with God. All that we benefit from because of God's love for mankind, sin says to us, do not touch that, because if you touch that, He will take over your life. He will want you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you don't want to have God controlling your life 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The fact that it would be a good blessing, that it would find joy, that you would find peace, that you would find contentment, that you would find real meaning in life, that your questions of all the whys and the wherefores of life would be addressed by God. Sin doesn't want you to know those. Sin doesn't want you to hear those. Sin separates us by that basis of our rebellion from God and says, don't go there. Don't go there. He doesn't want us to come to God. We are born dead in sin. We live following the course of this world, following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is at work in the sons of disobedience, Paul says. He says, we delight in the unstrained fulfillment of the passions of our flesh, carrying out the desires of the body and the mind, free in regard to righteousness, slaves to sin. Slaves to sin. Don't give me your religion. Don't give me your Christianity. I'm a free man. No, you're not. You're not free. You're not free to do as you want. If you were free to do as you want, you would read the Bible and see that there's a far better life for you by doing what God says. But the reason why you won't accept that is because you're not free. You're not free. You're bound into relationship with sin and Satan. God says that will lead to your ultimate destruction. Oh, I'm free. No, you're not. You're only free to do what sin wants you to do. You're only free within the boundaries of what sin and Satan will give you permission to do. You're only free now to get angry at what I'm saying because that's what he wants you to do. What I'm actually speaking to you about is something that you should be rejecting, something that you should be reviling against, something that you should say, stop talking to me about sin and start talking to me about how I can be saved. Stop telling me about the reality of my life and tell me how I can be born again of the Spirit of God. But he's saying to you, don't listen. Don't hear what he's saying. Reject it, reject it, reject it. You know what that's saying? You're not free. You're not free. You're bound. You're bound by sin. You're bound by Satan. Sin is terrible. Sin separates us from God in this life. And sin separates us from God in a most heinous, disgusting, and terrible way because it wants to destroy us. It's far worse than death. Far worse than death. You see, death separates us. Death separates us from other people. Separates us from possessions. It separates us from this life and all its opportunities. But sin is the cause of death. We saw the other night, why do people die? And I spoke about how the world doesn't have an answer to that.
Nobody can give us an answer except God. Sin is worse than death itself, because sin is the instrument that brought death into existence. Just as sin entered the world through one man, so death came. And as all sinned, so all die. You will die, I will die. We will die because we are sinners, born in the image of God, created in the image of God, born in the nature of Adam. And because of the rebellion against God in the Garden of Eden by Adam, we will die. And we die because of sin. Sin is worse than death. Sin separates us from God in life, and sin separates us from God in death. And sin ushers us into a terrible and an unbelievable existence after death. Job talks about it being the king of terrors. King of terrors. Death is a terrible thing. Death's a terrible thing. Death is not something that we embrace with joy. We do not celebrate someone's death. Those of you who have seen a person who is dead, there's something not right. They may even be dead only for a few moments, but the corruption has begun already. There's something missing. And it's not nice and it's not pleasant. I have never seen a dead body that has looked pleasant to me. I've seen people, and even in their worst state, they look more beautiful than they do than a dead person. There's something about death that isn't right. We were not created to die. We were created to live. And sin brought death down upon our heads. And sin, for that reason, is a terrible thing. It produces corruption and it is rotten to the core. Sin is worse than the devil. In your life and in my life, we would see the devil as being our great enemy. The fact is, though, that even in his fallen state, the devil still retains something of God, having been created by God. But sin has nothing of God in it. Yes, the devil would destroy us. But without sin, the devil has no power. When the devil came to Adam in the Garden of Eden, it wasn't the devil who led Adam into destruction. It was sin. It was man's own rebellion against God. Remember how Jesus was taken into the wilderness for 40 years, and how he resisted the devil, and how the devil had no power over him at all, and how although the devil took a great deal out of Jesus physically and emotionally, yet he had to leave Jesus as the perfect Son of God. The devil is only powerful when the devil is allied with sin. James talks about it and he says, don't blame the devil or don't blame God when you are tempted. It is not that God tempts you or the devil that tempts you. It is your own sin. When the devil tempts you, that then you reach out and accept that temptation. You embrace that temptation. And when you have embraced it, then it gives birth to sin. It gives birth to the reality of that sin. That thing in your heart gives birth to what you see with your eyes. That thing that you see with your eyes gives birth to that which you do with your hands. It is sin that is more terrible than the devil. The devil is powerless unless we respond to his temptation. And it is the sin within us that facilitates that response. Sin is worse than hell. It's worse than hell. We have seen during the week that hell is a real place of real punishment. A place of absolute and utter poverty. Because God will not be there in His gracious provision. We have seen that it's agonizing pain. It's a real place. It's not make-believe. It's not a metaphor. We've seen how Jesus spoke more about God's wrath and hell in the Bible than He does about God's love. It's a reality. I don't get it today when men and women say they believe in Jesus Christ. And you say to them, why do you believe in Jesus Christ? Because I want to go to heaven. And I say, well, why do you want to go to heaven? And I speak to them about sin and about hell. They say, oh, no, this doesn't exist. And then I think to myself, well, why do you need to be saved from somewhere that doesn't exist? I mean, if I was walking down Mavis Bank Street tomorrow and a guy came around the corner and he threw a red ring over my neck, you would sort of look at him and say, what's he doing? But if I go tomorrow and I'm walking along a towpath along the Clyde River and something happens and I fall in and the same guy throws a red ring round my neck, well, that's a different scenario, isn't it? Sin is worse than hell because hell is a real place of punishment created by God because of sin. If there had been no sin, there would be no hell. Hell is the place of punishment. And when we hear about hell, it shakes us. If we really listen to what God says in the Bible, and we get beyond this idea of, oh, that's just Him thumping again fire and brimstone, and we actually still our hearts, and we listen to the reality of what God actually says about this real place, and we listen to the points that God makes about the agonizing pain of those who dwell there, and we listen and we hear what God says about the wailing and the gnashing of teeth, and the fire that will never cease. And we listen about the angry presence of God and the wrath of God being poured out. And we think of it as the appalling prospect that it is that it will never, ever, ever end. And we think, what a terrible, terrible place to go. What a terrible place to be in. What an unbelievable place to exist in. Well, do you know what causes that? It's sin. It's sin. We are to murder sin because it hates God. We are to murder sin because it hates us. And it breaks us and it destroys us. We are to murder sin because it is worse than any physical suffering. We are to murder sin because it is worse than death. We are to murder sin because it is worse than the devil. We are to murder sin because it is worse than hell itself. Our problem today is that we have no comprehension of the reality of the terribleness of sin. We've bought into the world's laugh at the sin. Oh, it's just a big joke. Sin's just a joke. It's just a bit of fun. And we don't see, and we don't hear, and we're not able to take on board that what this destructive, corrosive element within us does to us in terms of our relationship with God, other people, we don't see it for the truly heinous, unbelievably destructive force that it is. That it is the cause of death. That it empowers the devil to tempt us. That it has given rise to God's creation of hell. We don't comprehend the enormity of it. If I was to say to you tonight, you will have a relationship with the devil, you would say, never. Never, never, never. I believe in God. If I was to say to you tonight, you will embrace death and you will enjoy death and you look forward to your death every single day of your life, you're looking forward to the moment you die, you would say, never, never, never. If I was to say to you tonight, you're looking forward to hell as though it's the greatest event that will ever take place in your life. You're looking forward to the destruction that you will experience. You're looking forward to that pain that will exist and never ever go away. You're looking forward with joy to the fact that God will pour His angry presence upon you. You would look and say to me, Andrew, you're not right in the head. Who in their right mind would want to dance with the devil? Who in their right mind wants to celebrate and look forward to their death? Who in their right mind is living expectantly and hoping for hell? Who is saying, I can't wait to die to go to hell? Nobody does. And yet sin is that which brings death. And sin is that which helps the devil draw us away into death. And sin is that which for which hell was created. And yet we play with it. We play with it as though it were of nothing. What a masterstroke. What a masterstroke this enemy has pulled. He has set up all these other things that we hate. Don't talk to me about my death. Don't talk to me about the devil. Don't talk to me about hell. They are not the things that we're to be worried about. It's a sin. That's why we're to murder it. It's our real enemy. But how can we do it? How can we do it? Much briefer. First, to be able to do it, you must be in Jesus Christ. You must believe in Jesus Christ. You cannot put death, sin to death, unless you have been born again of the Spirit of God. Why? Because you're not free to do it. You're dead in your trespasses and sins. You live under the willful rebellion that Satan has upon your life. You don't have the desire to destroy sin in your life. You don't have it. God says you don't have it. I'm not saying that. God says you don't have it. God says even you had the desire, you don't have the power. You don't have the power. And I know that maybe one or two of you at the moment are thinking, that's nonsense, I can do what I want. No, you can't. God says you are dead, and if you think you can't have the power to bring yourself from death to life, there's a man buried out in a grave out there along with his wife and his wains. Go out there and talk to them and ask them to get up out of that grave, because that's what God says you're like. And if you can go out there and speak to them in that grave out there and bring them in here, then I'll listen to you. But you can't. And God says you're like them. You're spiritually dead. And all you can do is to cry out to God for mercy. Cry out, God, save me. Do not allow this sin to destroy me. Bring me, please, from death to life. And when you have received that life that we've talked about all week, when you've embraced that life, then you must begin this campaign of murder. You must begin this campaign of putting to death a sin. And there are some very, very simple things you must do. The first thing you must do is you must be aware of the reality of it. You must be aware of the danger of it. And you must keep your conscience clear and sensitive to it. You know what it was like when you were a child and your father said, don't do that. And he was away and you went and did it. Boy, the first time you did it, you had to really muster up some courage. You had to really talk yourself into doing it. The second time you went and did it, it wasn't so bad. And the time you did it, the fifth or sixth time, it didn't matter. You were so blasé, it didn't matter. Why? Because your conscience, you see, was accommodating your new action. If you're going to murder sin, then you have to have your conscience very sensitive to the nature of sin and the destructiveness of sin. If you're not sensitive to the reality of sin, then you will go and do it and it won't cost you a moment's thought. And it will eat at you and it will destroy you because it is corrosive and it has your destructive desire within you. And you must be sensitive. God in the person of His Son says, watch and pray. Watch and pray. Watch and pray that you do not enter temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. You've got to keep that sensitivity keen. How do you do that? How do you keep that sensitivity keen? Well, it's simple. You don't go where sin is. Let not therefore sin reign in your mortal body. Do not love the world or the things in the world. What do you read? That tabloid newspaper full of language and filth? Why do you read it? Why do you expose yourself to the nonsense contained within it? What do you listen to? What songs do you listen to? What words do you put subconsciously into your mind? What do you watch on the television? What do you sit in front of on the internet at 1 o'clock at night? What do you think about? Where do you spend your Friday night? Where do you spend your Saturday night? Oh, there he is going the old killjoy road again. Well, do you know what you read, what you listen to, what you watch, what you turn your hands to on a Friday and a Saturday night and any other day of the week? If you're embracing the world and the ways of the world and the ways of sin, then you're saying, come on, death. Come on, devil. Come on, hell. I love you. I love you, death. I love you, devil. I love you, hell. Well, that's a bit strong. No, it's not. Because sin is the means to death. And sin gives the devil his opportunities. And sin is the reason why hell exists. The devil doesn't come and say to us, oh, you're doing a bad thing. That's a terrible thing you're doing. You shouldn't be doing that. He doesn't come and say to us, that's going to end in your destruction. He doesn't come and say to us, that's going to separate you from God. He doesn't come and say to us, this is going to take you to a lost eternity. Of course he's not going to say that. He wants to destroy you. He wants to destroy you in a way that you don't even know you're being destroyed. And so you have to be sensitive to it. That's why Jesus said, watch and pray. Watch what you watch. Watch what you read. Watch what you listen. Watch what you do. Because it's what you read and listen and do that determines where your heart really, really is. It doesn't matter what's coming out of your mouth. Have you got to the point yet where I realize that it doesn't really matter what you say? I've listened to enough lies in my life from people without and people within to realize it's not about what comes out of here. It's about what we do in our hearts and our minds and how that then is shown in the decisions that we make. That's the reality. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, if you dance with the devil, and you read the devil's material, and you listen to the devil's music, I'm going back to the old cliches. But it's true. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. The love of the Father is not in him. So you have to not do what God would have you not to do. And then you have to run to God. Run to him. Run to Christ. Run to his word. Run to prayer. Run to the Spirit. And say, cleanse me. Cleanse me. Give me joy. Give me peace. Give me contentment. Give me hope. Let me delight in your word. How shall a young man or a young woman or an older man cleanse their way if they attentive with care, take to your word. We teach it to our children. Your word have I hid in my heart that I might not sin against you. That's why we bring God's word to you. That's why we invite you to come and worship with us on the Lord's Day. We don't want you just to be part of a church. We want you to come and hear about God and the way of salvation and the way of life. We want you to hear the truth that the devil created into our ears for years and years and years. For years and years and years, he whispered into many of our ears. And we want you to come and with us say, no, I'm not going to listen to that whispering anymore. I'm not going to go that way any longer. I'm not going to follow that pathway of destruction. I'm not going to embrace death. I'm not going to say to the devil, I love you. I'm not going to say to hell, I can't wait until I'm in your midst. We want you to understand and to comprehend the reality of what it is to be born again of God and to have that relationship with Jesus Christ. That's what we desperately, desperately want. We haven't got it right. There's still much sin in my own heart. It breaks my heart. But we must seek to murder it. Otherwise it will consume and destroy us. Please hear the word of God. And if you have any questions, speak to me. Please, please speak to me. Because these words are the words of eternal life. Eternal life. Eternal life. Amen.